You've arrived here at a critical moment.
Hello, I'm Dan Brown.
And I'm Brandi Crawford Urriu.
We are the TV BFFs, and this is a podcast about the TV shows that people love most. And today, Brandi, it's just you and I.
Just us.
It's been a while since we've done just a stripped down show with just the two of us. Mm-hmm. I'm really looking forward to this episode.
Me too.
Today, we're talking about Mystery Box TV. We are in a world where we just saw Severance Season 2 wrap up. Black Mirror Season 7 has just aired. There's mm-hmm. a lot of other Mystery Box shows in the air. Your Paradise, your Zero Day, Three Body Problem, Sugar, Dark Matter, Silo. There's a lot of recent kind of Mystery Box shows in the last couple of years. Feels like a bit of a resurgence of the genre. So we're going to talk about it. It's one of my favorite genres of TV. But before we get into the draft that we're going to do, we're going to draft our best favorite and forever Mystery Box shows. But let's talk about some of the more recent entries, some of the more recent shows that have come out. Specifically, one of your favorite shows, it's Flirts With Your Criteria. You've mentioned it several times. Black Mirror is out with a new season. Mm-hmm. What have you seen so far of Season 7 of Black Mirror?
Season 7 of Black Mirror, I have seen the first three episodes.
Okay, first three of six.
Yeah, listen, Black Mirror is just... I love it. I love this show. Like, even when it's bad, it's good.
It's at least intriguing.
Yeah. Like, it always raises a point that I'm like, maybe I don't love this point. Because, we can talk about, like I said, I've seen the first three episodes. I think that the first episode hit a little too close to home. I was like,
It was creepy. So, spoilers for Black Mirror Season 7. We won't get into uber specifics, but
yeah,
you know, kind of a light spoiler conversation. The first episode is called Common People. Mm-hmm. Stars Rashida Jones and Chris O'Dowd. They play a married couple. Rashida Jones has mm-hmm. like a brain tumor, and there's like a procedure that basically can implant, like basically swap out that part of the brain with like basically connecting Rashida Jones to a grid. Mm-hmm. But that means she... like can't leave a specific territory and will black out and like read ads to her kids because she's a school teacher. So like, it's very of the now, very of the moment, very creepy. It's a super expensive procedure.
Yeah. She has to sign up for like basically a subscription service in order to pay for the procedure. And it's just like, it's just really insidious and like very much an allegory for the insurance, everything to do with like health insurance, everything mm-hmm. to do with like pharmaceutical sales. I'm reading a book right now about the dark side of Johnson & Johnson and like pharmaceutical sales. No, thank you.
Right. Yeah. So the second episode's called Bette Noir.
The second episode, I love it. I love it. And I thought I was going to hate it because the lead character's name is Verity. And there is this book called Verity, and it is by Colleen Hoover. And it is like, so Colleen Hoover, if you are living under a rock,
right,
is this woman who has like written all of these, like, I get they're like romance novels, mm-hmm. but like,
if not for her, there would be no Blake Baldoni scandal right now.
Yeah, there would. That is a book that she wrote that like, anyway, like that's a whole other conversation to have mm-hmm. about her books, but she has a book called Verity. And that was the first book that I read by her. Cause like everybody on Book Talk is like, oh my God, this ending is insane. Like, so like, obviously I have to read it. But the lead character's name was Verity. And when the woman in this thing, name was Verity, I was just like, oh Jesus, she's going to be bad.
She was,
but it was, I loved it.
See, I didn't. And this is the thing about Black Mirror is that it's an anthology show. Each mm-hmm. episode tells a different story. So it's not, to go back to the Mystery Box theme here, it's not a classic serialized mystery that mm-hmm. unfolds and, you know.
And it's also not a mystery of the week, like as in an anthology form, I don't feel like.
No, but what I think it does have that connects it to the Mystery Box genre is almost every episode has this underlying question that I associate with all Mystery Box television, which is, what's really going on here? Mm-hmm. What's really happening? You know what I mean? Like, that's kind of like this fundamental basic question underlying all of these Mystery Box shows that I think Black Mirror shares. And for instance, with that second episode, Bette Noir, the whole time I'm thinking, okay, what's really happening here? This woman's reality is shifting. It's changing. Mm-hmm. The things she thought was true are proving not to be. And like, what's really happening here? Like, so there are kind of like mini mystery boxes within that show. I watched the whole season. I really liked some of it. I really didn't like some of it. I didn't like Bette Noir. I didn't really like Plaything. Mm-hmm. I did like Common People, which we mentioned, mm-hmm. although it was very unsettling. I thought it was really well done, well acted. Tracy Ellis Ross is like the representative. Was fucking hilarious and really, mm-hmm. really good. There's one starring Paul Giamatti called Eulogy that I'm really excited for you to watch. I thought that was mm-hmm. really good, kind of more emotional, moving. And there's a sequel to the USS Callister that starred Jesse Plemons mm-hmm. and Kristen Milioti a couple seasons ago. Black Mirror, they brought it back, continuing that story. Kristen Milioti having a moment post The Penguin and a couple other things. She actually is in a show that might appear in my draft later on. That one was really, really good. And then that leaves the third episode that you've seen, which is Hotel Reverie, which mm-hmm. stars your girl Issa Rae. Mm-hmm. By the way, her character name
is Brandy.
So you got a whole episode of people calling Issa Rae Brandy. How was that?
I know. That was a nice surprise. and I liked that. The episode, like, as far as Black Mirror episodes go, I think mm-hmm. that it was a weaker episode.
Sure.
But I really enjoyed it. I liked the tech in this third episode. That's so crazy is that, like, they're trying to revive this old studio. They're kind of old classic movies mm-hmm. and they have this way of just like basically they can like put a person from now into one of those movies. They recreate the whole thing like in like this virtual space.
Right. Like you're watching Casablanca, but it's starring George Clooney.
Yeah.
Right.
And they put the person like puts like this thing in their like not really an implant, like a headphone thing that they put in and they like kind of are in this other world, but like the mechanics of how things work is like it's a little confusing.
Right, it's that classic thing of like persons on a table with some sort of mm-hmm. tech going on, but their mind is somewhere else. They're living in a different timeline.
Yeah, and like and the time that they're in is like she spent like years there, but like I think like 15 minutes passed in like in real time. But I enjoyed it. I've read all the kind of hate on Issa Rae because like, you know, she has a character.
Right.
That's kind of who she plays.
Kind of plays herself a little bit. Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
But I didn't mind. I felt that that worked. I just thought like overall, like I really liked the woman who was the old timey actress.
Yeah. Emma Corrin, who's great. She played young Princess Diana in The Crown.
She's
really, really good. She's great. And she did great in that role. I agree. I liked it. I didn't love it. I thought it was a little long. It's like an hour, 15 minutes.
It was so long.
But I'm like, we get it. Like, I think it would have been a 45 minute episode. It would have been an absolute banger. It also felt a little bit, and Black Mirror does this. And I think, what's the other one that I liked? Eulogy kind of has a little bit of this. It has a little bit of that San Junipero, mm-hmm. which was an excellent episode of yeah. television, one of the Black Mirror's all-time best. Mm. And I feel like they try and capture that magic sometimes. And
you're trying to capture that, like they're going after that again. And it's like, just let that be. Let that be.
I want to use that episode, Hotel Reverie with Issa Rae, as a segue here, because that episode was all about reinventing, rebooting old classics. And in the era of TV and movies and content that we're in, that seems to be all that we get. It's reboots, it's reimaginings, it's sequels, it's all based on IP. And what I love about mystery box shows is that more often than not, they are original ideas. Mm-hmm. They are not based on anything. They are inspired by each other, mm-hmm. right? Like Twin Peaks, in my opinion, kind of has its DNA in a lot of these shows. Lost has its DNA in a lot of these shows, etc. Mm-hmm. But they're all original stories. So let's use that to kind of shift over into mm-hmm. the mystery box of it all. And the biggest name in the mystery box game right now is Severance. Mm-hmm. Season 2 recently wrapped. We talked in great length in prior episodes of this podcast about season 1. It landed on, you know, recent TV lists for us. I loved it. I thought it was one of the best season finales in recent memory, maybe of all time, that season 1 finale. And then season 2 hits to great expectation. It had been almost 3 years since it's been on the air. What are your thoughts? What were your thoughts on Severin season two?
I hated it.
You hated it? All of it?
All of it.
Really?
I mean, listen, I really tried. And but this is the thing. Number one, I do love TV.
Sure.
I do love TV, but like I do not want to work for TV. Mm. And I feel like Severance is so high concept and heady that there is just no way that you could have gone into that second season without having either read up on or rewatched the first season.
I watched the last three of season one and it felt like a requirement going into season two.
And so I didn't do that. So I feel like half the time I was like, wait, that's like things like weren't really connecting because I'm not remembering that this happened before or how it happened before. And it's like, and everything is so, I appreciate like how intentional everything is in the show.
Well, that's what I was going to say. Do you think that's a product of the show itself or because of the 3-year gap? Like if you were watching this fresh as a binge where you could go right from the end of season one into season two, do you think you would have the same issues with season two?
I think it would have been a different experience.
Yeah.
If I could have kind of seen it all at once. Like Severance was another show that like they released weekly.
Yes.
And I feel like that's the kind of show you need to binge because you're getting so much information within each episode that like, I guess I could go either way though. Cause it's also
I totally disagree.
Sometimes you do need to like decompress after an episode. It's like, what the fuck is that?
Yes. Yes.
Right.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I'm with your second thought there was that like, I loved the week to week and generally I enjoy week to week television. Mm-hmm. Just writ large. I think it's, you know, I like when things become quasi monoculture. There is no real monoculture in this day and age, but Severance, I don't know if it got close, but it was the closest we've had in a minute.
It was.
I feel like it really had a big glow up from season one to season two. Maybe not in quality. I agree with you. I do believe it was a step down from season one. I did like a lot of it. I think there were some missteps. I think it got a little bit rough around the edges there with like the Miss Cobell stuff.
Get that episode out of here.
Everything with the goats, everything with the marching band. Like there was a lot of just like unnecessary shenanigans going on. Mm-hmm. I think for plot reasons, like you kind of needed the goats to get, you know, Gwendolyn Christie there. So there was enough manpower to take out the big guy in the elevator. And then you kind of needed the marching band so that there could be this big moment. Fuck you, Mr. Milchick. Like, I didn't love all that, but I think everything about Mark and Helly and Gemma really, really, really worked. And if I'm focusing on just those aspects, and I don't want to spoil anything in case you haven't seen Severance yet, but honing in on those three characters, I thought was really fantastic. The episode 7, Chikai Bardo, I thought was one of the most beautiful things I've seen on TV in a minute. The finale wasn't as good as I wanted it to be. I actually just rewatched it. It's why I was a little bit late today and I had to push 15 minutes, Brandy. I just finished rewatching the finale since when it aired. I didn't want to rewatch it right away. I let it marinate and I liked it better the second time, but I really noticed the things that didn't work. Like I said, the goats, the marching band, but a lot of it did. So I'm in for season three. I think it's doing a lot of interesting things, but you're right. It is heavy lifting. It's heavy lifting, and a lot of thought needs to, to me, it
feels like they, and I, this is maybe is due to the fact that like I didn't like rewatch it before I came into season two, but I feel like I'm now not quite sure what I'm watching. Like I kind of went in season one thinking it was one thing, and it's like, and it's great to kind of have your preconceived notions, and the show kind of tells you like, actually, no, this is what it is, right? And so going into this season, I was just like, wait, I thought, okay, so like at the end of last season, like they were trying to like not be innies anymore, but like now we're innies again, and like now our outies.
But that's what I like about it. Like it's, these shows often have that evolution, and I
don't mind an evolution. Like I mean, I welcome an evolution, but I feel like they just threw so much stuff at the wall, and it's, they're kind of like picking and choosing what we're going to follow up on.
I agree. I think they need to revert to the mean a little bit. Like they had a really good tight idea in season one that was executed really well.
Yeah. And like, I feel like in season two, it really expanded. And I'm just like,
yeah.
Okay. So now like, in season one, like I didn't really care what Lumen did. Mm-hmm. Now I do care. And now I do want to know.
But that's like what the whole show is about is what are they doing?
No, I know. But like, I just don't feel that they're giving me the crumbs that I need to want to, you know what I mean? Like the crumbs that they're dropping about what Lumen is and what Lumen does. Like, mm-hmm. I'm disinterested in following those crumbs.
Well, what I think is interesting is that, like, I actually think they've made it pretty clear what Lumen is about. Mm-hmm. There's just a lot of extra bells and whistles I don't really need. But I think it's like, you know, they've met, you know, a couple of things that highlighted for me on the rewatch of the finale. And just, you know, I was reading all, you know, the recaps and listening to the podcast and watching the theory video. So I was like really deep in it mm-hmm. when it was going on. And to me, my read, which I think is supported by a lot of theories and a lot of the text of the show, is that like Kier Egan was obsessed with avoiding and preventing pain. Mm-hmm. And that's the whole bedrock of Lumen. How can we exterminate pain from human consciousness? And that's what all of the trials are. That's what Severance is really about. Mm-hmm. How they're doing it is what's interesting, and what they're doing to the people involved in it as they pursue these means is what's interesting. And what happens when these people start catching on and smartening up mm-hmm. and, you know, Mark S. realizing like, hey, if I go through with this big grand plan to I don't want to spoil anything, but like undergo this mission and theoretically end Lumen, what happens to us innies? Do our lives cease to exist? Like it becomes this very existential, interesting commentary that I am enjoying and I want to see it continue. Mm-hmm. How the fuck they get out of some of the things they got themselves into and what happens next, I have no idea. But like, I'm along for the ride, yeah. You know?
But I guess, and a part of me too, like I would love to be able to, I love it when I can raw dog a show. And what I mean by that is watch a show and not only not be having a second screen experience because I'm on my phone, mm-hmm. but basically I want to be able to watch a show and not immediately feel like I have to go to Vulture and read the recap because I missed 5 million things.
Sure. Okay.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I guess it's really more of a crime show than because you were asking me earlier if there were any crime shows that like could possibly have been in my mystery box list.
Sure.
And there's not right now, but like I almost had put down White Lotus, which you could think of as a crime show since everything revolves around like who's going to be murdered this season.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. There is a mystery there. There is a mystery, but I wouldn't call it a mystery box.
It's not a mystery box.
Right.
But White Lotus, I feel, is a show that I would happily raw dog.
Sure.
And if I was going to look at recaps or something afterwards, it's just because like I want to continue having the conversation about it.
Well, you know what's interesting? And that was another week-to-week show that recently finished its recent season. Mm-hmm. And there was a lot of chatter in between weeks. But I found the conversation about White Lotus to be inherently different and actually think better than the conversation about Severance. Because the conversation about Severance, you're never really talking about character.
Yeah.
And if you are, it's always in service of plot theories. Mm-hmm. What is happening? How is it happening? Whereas White Lotus was really about the characters. Mm-hmm. When is this person going to break? When is this person going to show us who they really are? When is this person going to turn the corner? Like it felt very character driven, which I think is what Mike White does very well. Mm-hmm. There is always a mystery, like you mentioned, like there's a dead body at the beginning of each White Lotus, but I don't think that makes it a mystery box show. And this brings me to, I crafted a definition of what mystery box means. And this is what I came up with. Tell me if you agree, disagree, if I'm mm-hmm. leaving anything out or if you need to add anything.
I'm actually glad you have a definition because whenever you had first said mystery box, I was like, is this a term that I'm not aware of?
Right. Yeah. So a mystery box television series is a series, this is my definition, a series mm-hmm. that features a central question or mystery as its driving narrative.
Okay.
But that can apply to more than just mystery box shows, right? Mm-hmm. Further, mystery box stories often include elements such as the supernatural, time mm-hmm. travel, alternate dimensions, post-apocalyptic scenarios, mystical aspects, dream logic, or the afterlife. Think heaven, hell, purgatory, or like we mentioned, a bardo, a liminal space in between lives or whatever. Mm-hmm. There's often an event that sparks the narrative, and a recurring aspect of these shows is whether or not they stick the landing and answer the central questions proposed by the series in a satisfying way. To note, not included in this category are straight up genre shows. So zombie shows, vampire shows, just a straight up post-apocalyptic, you know, like a Station 11. There's really no mystical or supernatural there. So like those don't quite reach the level for me. And then you mentioned crime drama mysteries are generally not included. For instance, your Mayor of Easttown's, your White Lotus, which has, you know, the who's going to be dead at the end of it.
SVU,
right? But if there's an additional supernatural element or some of those other elements I mentioned, then I think it does reach Mystery Box, like a True Detective season one.
Mm-hmm.
Twin Peaks, the first Mystery Box television show of all time. The big question was, who killed Laura Palmer?
Mm-hmm.
Brandy, I got to tell you, I watched a lot of Twin Peaks preparing for this episode, and it is not a straight up crime show. It is the weirdest show.
It's the weirdest I've ever show. Seen it's so in my weird.
Life. And I'll tell you what, post Twin Peaks, I forgive and I'm able to rock with a lot of the shit in Severance that I previously was like, what the hell is going on here?
Mm-hmm.
Post Twin Peaks, I'm like, oh yeah, this is nothing compared to what was going on.
Can I just give like a quick, my quick Twin Peaks story? I feel
yes, absolutely.
So Twin Peaks came out in 1990. Mm-hmm. So when it first came out, I was certainly not old enough to like be watching Twin Peaks on TV, but I definitely remember the ad campaign for it. Cause like I watched a lot of TV and I watched it cause it was on ABC.
Yes, it was. Yep. ABC.
Cause ABC was like my jam, like TJF. Have you heard of it?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And so I feel like I came to Twin Peaks at such weird times that were never conducive to me actually enjoying the show. Because the first time I came to it, I think I was maybe like 10. And no.
Yeah.
No, there's no way. Like that, nothing about that. It's like, no matter how like worldly I thought I was at 10, because I was reading Stephen King books, I'm not watching Twin Peaks at 10.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of Mystery Box authors, Stephen King.
Yeah, Stephen King, my favorite, my man.
Yeah.
Then I came back again in high school. But with high school, I started with Fire Walk With Me because like I was edgy. I was cool. I'm doing things like whatever. I'm looking at everything that David Lynch has ever done.
Fucking edgy. Yeah.
I watched it and was like, I hate everything about it. This is the weirdest shit I've ever seen. I'm never watching this again.
But you watched it without watching any Twin Peaks shit.
Like all I had was like my super cursory knowledge from when I was in fifth grade.
That's wild. Okay. Brandy, that is wild. Yeah.
And then I came back again in like the late 2000s. I think I was like in my late 20s, early 30s. And that was when I feel that I truly finally appreciated Twin Peaks. So that was just, I went through a real evolution.
My Twin Peaks origin story is that, so I went to Syracuse University and I studied television. And one of the classes that I took was with literally a television expert, author, Bob Thompson. Bob Thompson taught the history of primetime TV. And we spent a full 2 weeks on Twin Peaks. What it did to the culture, what it did to television itself, the inherent mystery surrounding it. We watched clips. We watched, so like, I had this base understanding of Twin Peaks, if not like an intimate knowledge of, from, you know, late teens, early 20s, back to college. But then I never watched it. But I did watch Lost, which was airing around the same time. So learning about Twin Peaks while watching Lost was certainly interesting. And then as, you know, television progressed and Lost was a huge hit, and then did it stick the landing? We'll get into that, I'm sure, as we get into this, the rest of this podcast here. But then other imitators inspired by, informed by, you know, references to, all of those shows started popping up. And that's kind of where we are now, where I mean, I sent you a list of at least 30, 40 shows here or something like that. Dozens of shows here that were kind of all inspired by the Twin Peaks, the David Lynch, the Lost, the J.J. Abrams, the Damon Lindelofs. Like these are like the forefathers of Mystery Box TV that has inspired, you know, many, many shows. We're going to pick between the two of us our top 10 Mystery Box TV shows. We're each going to draft five shows, two best Mystery Box shows, two favorites, and one forever show that you would watch on a loop forever. Why don't we get into the draft? We'll talk about these shows as we go. And then at the end, we can mention anything that didn't hit our list. There's another recent show I'm dying to get your take on that will kind of uses our as our code at the end. Mm-hmm. So why don't you start? You can have the first pick.
All right. I mean, you know what my first pick is. Like, just hands down. I mean, it's the X-Files.
Yeah.
It's in my criteria. Well, actually, did I move it out of my criteria because we had changed?
No, I think it's still in there.
It's still in there.
I think
there.
It's okay. Still in there, yeah.
I love X-Files. I've always loved X-Files. I love everything about it.
Yeah. I mean, central question, the tagline, the truth is out there. Yeah. So what is the truth?
Mm-hmm.
You know, like that was literally part of the marketing.
Yeah. The entire show jumps off because Fox Mulder's sister is abducted by aliens.
Yeah. What happened?
And he wants to find He wants to find the answer. I love the relationship between Mulder and Scully. I mean, I loved Agent Mulder, like David Duchovny. What a dream. What a dream. By the time I was like in college, I think I was I wasn't as obsessed with him. So it's not like I was watching Californication on mm-hmm. loop or whatever, but I love that man. X-Files, I'm drafting that is my forever. That's one of my forevers. Like,
well, you only get one forever in this draft.
That's it. But I will tell you what a runner up from this list that I wouldn't have thought of until I was looking at this list. And I was like, oh my God, I could 100% watch that forever. And that is The Good Place.
Ooh, okay. Let's put a pin in that. Cause that might, I mean, you might need to draft it later. Who knows? So let's put a pin in that.
Yeah. All right. Your turn.
Okay. Surprising nobody. I have to pick Lost.
Yes.
And it's my forever.
Mm-hmm.
So, okay. A little backstory here. When I thought of doing this episode, one, I thought it would be a fun conversation, but two, I'm like, this is a great excuse to go back and rewatch some shit that I've been really wanting to rewatch, but just haven't found the opportunity or the time or the excuse. Lost being one of those shows. And Lost, that's 6 seasons of an ABC network drama. So that's like 120 episodes.
Yeah.
I've been rewatching it. I've rewatched half, the first 3 seasons, and I fucking love it. It's really, really good. I mentioned a little bit on our recent episode with Anna Reisman about our best favorite TV characters. Mm-hmm. I mentioned Kate from Lost, but, you know, Sawyer's up there. Jack is up there. John Locke, Desmond's. It's deep in the hearts and minds of TV fans in ways that I'm not even sure we realized now that it's been off the air for so long.
Mm-hmm.
Bring it back around to stick the landing. Lost, in many people's opinions, didn't. I disagree. I remember watching it in real time. I was in my first apartment in Greenpoint in Brooklyn. I remember watching it on my Quasar tube TV with my TiVo. And I loved it. And I cried. And I thought I understood it. I've done a lot of like reading and, you know, shit since. But like, it didn't bug me like it bugged a lot of people.
Mm-hmm.
So I've always held it warmly, you know, in my remembrance as far as like that sticking the landing of it goes. So
mm-hmm.
that doesn't ding it for me like it mm-hmm. would other people. That's what allows me to put it in a forever. I'm not going to be pissed off every time I get to the final seasons.
I know. That's what I was going to ask you. I was like, so you are okay with the ending? Okay. That's interesting.
Yeah. Like Game of Thrones, I probably wouldn't put it in a, mm-hmm. and that's not in this conversation, but like yeah. the way that ended really dinged it for me, whereas Lost really doesn't. All right. Your pick. This is the one spot where I'm nervous because I have one other show that I have to get. And if mm-hmm. you take it right now, I'll be upset. But it's your pick. Go for
okay.
it.
Okay. We're going to go with, do I want to do best or fave? I think that we're going to do best for this. But like, I think I want to go with fave because I don't think that we ever talked about this show. And I really love this show.
Okay.
Russian Doll season 1.
Thank goodness. Okay. Wow.
Yeah.
I'm surprised this is coming. So did you even watch season 2? Because there was a second season that came out.
There was a second season and I did watch it. But the first season was so good. The second season, I'm not even recalling it.
I didn't watch it. I got subpar reviews, but
yeah, like because I must have watched it because I love season 1 so much.
If you're referring to the list I put together, I wrote Russian Doll season 1 only because that's what I've seen. But there are 2 seasons. So if you are picking this, you are picking both seasons. I hope you realize.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's fine. Natasha Leontkin does know. I'm going to say it's a fave.
It's a fave. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us about Russian Doll that might have gone unwatched by a bunch of people.
Russian Doll is just, I mean, the conceit is just like wild. Basically, it's Natasha Leon's birthday.
Yeah.
And she goes to a party and it's Natasha Leon's birthday is Groundhog Day.
Yeah.
And so she continues to live the same day over and over again. She like kind of gets hip to it, maybe like the second or third time it happens, and starts to like do weird stuff.
Sure.
But like, it's just really fun. And it's like, I love a show that's set in New York, and I love a show that's like specifically set in New York.
Yeah.
It's like she was in my neighborhood.
That's right.
Like where I lived. Like those were my, like those were my stomping grounds in the East Village. My 20s neighborhood, my 20s and 30s neighborhood. It's my neighborhood where I was from when I moved to New York until I got in the family way and had to move to Brooklyn because I needed a washer, dryer and unit. Although, do you know that it seems like according to Street Easy, like washer and dryers like just come with apartments now? These people moving to New York have no idea.
Are you fucking kidding me?
They have no idea.
Jesus. Like,
yeah, fuck kids. But anyway, Russian Doll is just really fun. There's just like a ton of like comics in it.
Yes.
It's just such a great New York scene. I love like the last episode. Like, I think that's how come season two had a lot to live up to, because like it was a really perfect one season show.
It would have been a great miniseries just by itself as a one season. Yeah. Event.
Yeah. Like, because I think it was what, like 8 episodes? I think they were half hours.
Yeah.
It was so easy to get through.
And did we mention carried and centered around Natasha Lyonne, who's just
who's
absolutely
just
incredible.
Amazing.
One of our best, like, just humans, I feel.
Honestly, national treasure. National treasure, Natasha Lyonne.
Yeah.
Russian
Doll, it's the third pick. I never would have guessed it.
Mm-hmm.
But this clears the way for the show that I absolutely had to get. I went with Lost as my number one pick just to kind of, you know.
Oh, I know which one. I know what you're going
to
pick.
To mirror your forever with my forever. But my best, a number one, best mystery box show of all time. I finished rewatching the finale fucking yesterday. I've been binging it the last week. It's The Leftovers.
Mm-hmm.
It is The Leftovers, created by Damon Lindelof, who worked on Lost.
Mm-hmm.
And this was kind of his follow-up. Mm-hmm. You know, it was, the first season was based on IP, based on a book by Tom Peralta. And basically the premise is, one day on October 14th, in an instant, 2% of Earth's population just disappears, departs into thin air. It's called the sudden departure. And the whole show, like the only supernatural thing that really happens outside of the Justin Theroux character, Kevin Garvey, but like the real inciting incident is the supernatural thing. These people disappear. And the whole show is the aftermath and what that does to people, the cults it inspires, the grief it inspires. Like, it's just like a very, very emotional, a bit grim. First season is kind of a tough watch. It's like pretty brutal. The first season is based on the book, but then the second and third seasons, Damon Lindelof just kind of takes it and goes with the story. It stars Justin Theroux, who I mentioned, as Kevin Garvey. It stars Carrie Coon in maybe her best role ever. I did not mention this on our Anna Reisman characters episode, and I should have. Mm-hmm. Nora Durst, Carrie Coon, is an absolute standout best character of all time. I just love everything about it. It makes me cry. It makes me laugh. It's like darkly comic and funny. Really great performances. Like Regina King is in it. A young Margaret Qualley is in it. Like, there's just like, it's just a stacked cast. It's has a lot of religious undertones, like a lot of Damon Lindelof shows do, but it doesn't really make a stance on any one thing. There is some just like crazy Twin Peaks dream logic shit when it comes to the Kevin Garvey character and the fact that like he gets killed and comes back to life, like spoiler alert, but like how and why and when that happens is crazy. Like, The Leftovers is just as good as Mystery Box TV gets, in my opinion, and therefore it is my number one best pick.
All right. I actually have never seen it.
Brandy, come on.
I know. Do you know, originally, I will say that when it came out, I wasn't interested in it because I thought that it was the same thing as Left Behind, which is like the Christian books about it's basically the premise is that the rapture happens and so all the people so that's what I thought that this was a retelling of that. I didn't realize that like this is a separate book and like not crazy.
I mean, it is crazy.
I mean, crazy.
There's crazy like, shit, like,
but not like gonna be a movie starring Kirk Cameron.
No.
Because that's what Left Behind
is. I will say, I think this is the first of everything we've drafted here that I think successfully, without a doubt, did land the plane.
Okay.
I think the finale, the series finale, centers the Nora character. It's called The Book of Nora, the final episode. I just watched it, like I said, last night. Mm-hmm. Haven't stopped thinking about it since. And what's great about it is the Nora character is cursed in like the world in which everyone lives, because everyone may have lost someone, but she lost her two kids and her husband. So 2% of the population disappears, but 100% of her family disappears. So she's like this, you know, everything is compounded for her in a way. Mm-hmm. And by the end of the series, she figures out a way to potentially go to where the departed went. But we don't see it. And at the very end of the series, she just tells her story of what happened. And you're left to either believe it or not. And it's beautiful and kind of perfect and like just kind of almost like symmetrical, but also heartbreaking ending to the story. Mm-hmm. But then at the same time, it could just be a load of shit from what we know about the Nora character in this world and the way these people operate. It could have been horseshit, you know? So I think it landed the plane in a really fun way. And the final image, I think, is just like really astounding and special. So,
okay.
Leftovers. Check it out if you haven't. Only 3 seasons, 28 episodes. Pretty good watch.
Okay.
Back to you, Brandy, with the 5th pick in the mystery box draft.
For the 5th pick, I want to go with a best. And for that, like, this is a tough best one for me because I feel like both of the shows that I have down as best, they weren't best the whole way through.
Okay.
But they had like, but I feel like the concepts were really elevated and made me think and like, I like just really, I don't know, like I think it's great. So I'm going with, one of my best shows is Mr. Robot.
Ooh, I only watched the first season. I didn't stick with it.
Oh, I went to the end.
Yeah, okay.
I went to the end with Mr. Robot.
Was Rami Malek?
With Rami Malek and Bobby Cannavale.
Yeah, Sam Esmail, writer, creator.
And it was about this hacker named Elliot, who basically is trying to bring down, what was it? Why am I forgetting the name of the, they're like Big Brother type bank. Mm. Like it was, they're Lumen. Yeah. It was the Lumen right, of this Lumen, world.
Exactly.
And he's trying to bring it down. And like, it just like, it's just a crazy, it's crazy. And like, he does all these drugs. And when he does drugs, like his Mr. Robot comes up and like it's very Fight Club-esque.
Right. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But then it turns out like Mr. Robot is actually like his dad and also Christian Slater. Yeah, it just like it had me just thinking in like the best ways. But it was also just like it was really fun to watch because he was just, he's insane. Like the stuff that Elliot was getting into is just crazy. But then it just like the show just really goes off the rails. Like there's this like whole like cabal, like it really takes the like all of the billionaires are like Illuminati and like actualizes that. And like that's like a real thing that happens. It was really good. And it was on USA of all channels.
So if you had to distill like these two things that we talk about with Mystery Box, like what's the central question or like what's really happening here? And then also did it stick the landing at the end? Because like I said, I only watched that first season.
I would say that I feel like the central question was just like, how can like corporations shouldn't have this much control over us? And why do they?
Right. Right.
And like, how can we get out of that?
Right.
Like, that's what Elliot was trying to do.
Right. How do we I just looked it up. E-Corp.
E-Corp. Yes. Yes. E-Corp.
But also his name is Elliot. Is there a correlation between the E and Elliot? Just throwing it out there.
Oh, there might have been. But, and I feel like I thought it stuck the landing. Like I wasn't, like the questions that I was left with afterwards, I feel like they're bigger picture questions anyway, that like, I don't think that the show could have just like really answered super concisely.
Right, right.
Do you know what I mean? But I feel like in terms of like what was happening in the plot of the show, and like how these characters are evolving and like changing and growing or not growing, I was happy with how it ended.
Okay. I love that.
But I will say that like Moses gave up on it I don't think he came back. I don't think he came back after like the middle of season two.
Yeah, it lost people. It got a little bit dense.
It did.
All right, for my next pick, speaking of character journeys and a show that got more dense and crazy as it went, but I think in a great way that I loved, and you mentioned this as your runner-up to Forever, so I am going to go ahead and steal it from you, and it's The Good Place.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to put it in the best.
That's a great pick.
I love having some comedy representation here.
Mm-hmm.
Mike Schur created the show starring
Kristen Bell
and
Ted Danson.
Ted Danson. Thank you. I'm just blanking on everybody. And William Jackson Harper as Chidi Eleanor. And basically it's like, what happens when you die?
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of the undergirding question, is like, what happens when you die? What is the afterlife? How does it work? And is this The Good Place, and will they ever get there? Slight spoilers for season one. Turns out it's not actually in The Good Place. It's been the bad place the whole time. Huge mic drop. And then what I love about the show is they reinvent it every single season, and it gets more complex. But with that complexity becomes more jokes, more callbacks, mm-hmm. more fun character moments, more growth. The whole Eleanor Chidi relationship, I think, is phenomenal.
Janet.
Oh, my God. I know. Darcy Carden is Janet. But anyway, The Good Place, you might not think of as a mystery box show because it is comedy, because it is half hour. It doesn't have these big kind of grim, gritty, world changing stakes to it. But at the same time, it does have world changing stakes and life changing stakes. These are people kind of fighting for their autonomy in the afterlife and for some understanding in the afterlife. And especially when they realize, again, I'm sorry for the spoilers, but they're in the bad place.
Mm-hmm.
How do they get to the good place? And how does all that work? It was just, to steal a term, a bit of a Russian doll of a show. Every time you lifted the thing, there was another thing inside of it that you had to explore and make sense of. And it was just funny the whole way.
And it was funny the whole way. That's
if not for my undying love and emotional attachment to Parks and Rec,
mm-hmm.
you know what? Taking myself out of it, The Good Place might be Mike Schur's best show, whereas Parks and Rec is probably my favorite show of his. But those are one and two, in mm-hmm. my opinion. I think, yeah, Good Place, the best comedic mystery box show of all time.
Awesome. I love it. Wait, so what do I have down? I had X-Files for Forever. I had Mr. Robot for best.
You have a favorite and a best. So you have another favorite and another best left.
Okay. So my other favorite, I am going to go with Stranger Things, which I'm glad that it's on this list because it could also, it's very easily horror, but I do feel the big question is what the fuck is happening in Hawkins?
What's really going on here? Right, exactly. Yeah. What is the upside down?
Mm-hmm.
How does it work?
Why is 11? Why?
Yeah, well, that we got some answers
yeah.
in the end of season four.
Yeah.
You're right. So I added Stranger Things to this list and I almost didn't. But I think the thing with Stranger Things, and I talked about this with John Thrasher during our superhero episode, he drafted it as a superhero show, which I think it also,
mm-hmm.
Eleven's a fucking superhero,
mm-hmm.
right? But then it's also this mystery of how did this happen? Where did she come from? What are her real powers? How do they interact with the big bad and the upside down? I think mm-hmm. it's a great pick.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we were talking about how much I love Stephen King and how he's the mystery box author. I feel like this show is the closest thing to...
Yeah.
Stephen King that I'm going to get.
Pretty much.
You know, in terms of a serialized TV show.
Yeah. And that's coming back somewhat. I mean, they've filmed everything. So I think mm-hmm. that's coming back.
It's coming to Broadway in a couple months.
That too. I know. Some of those set images look pretty fucking crazy too.
Yeah. I'm down to see it.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, Stranger Things is just it's really enjoyable. It also I feel had one of the best comebacks I've seen. Because I thought I was done, it's about to be season five, right?
Five, fifth and final. Yep.
After season three, I was like, this show's not gone. We're gone. We're done. I'm not coming back. I don't think.
Season three it wasn't my favorite. The mall season.
Yeah. Right? The mall yeah. season. I was like, this is not great. But then season four, I was just wow. I'm scared. It had that same, cause season one, it was oh my God, this is kind of scary.
Yeah.
This is okay. It felt like a 80s scary movie.
It did, yeah.
And I love that. And like the fact that it like came back, and also just like, I loved where they took the story, because like they had to kind of keep keep opening another, like peeling back another layer, another layer, another layer.
I think what we're getting at is what they've done well, which a lot of these shows don't, is the pace and frequency of doling out answers.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Like season four, like we were all getting a little frustrated after season three, and then season four hits and we're like, oh, backstory, origins.
And they started putting it together. Yes.
We know Vecna and the Upside Down, and like all of this shit is starting to come together. There's still a lot of questions left remaining.
Yeah.
What is his real control? What's going to happen? And, you know, the buzz is that there's going to be like, what the creators keep saying is like, it's all going to come back to season one. So I'm thinking, is there going to be some time travel going on? Like, there's going to be some shit, some mm-hmm. mystery box shit, but they've done a really good job of doling out enough to be like, yeah, I feel satisfied, but still very interested.
See, that's what, and I like, that's the kind of storytelling that I feel that I was missing from Severance, because the stuff that they were doling out was like that weird ass Cobell episode, which I'm just like, okay, so I feel like I'm not going to get this episode until like in two seasons from now, when it's going to be clear that like, oh, that's why we went back with Miss Cobell in that episode.
Can I tell you my fix for that episode? I think it was as simple as
lighting.
No. If they want to do that episode exactly as they did it, the whole season can be exactly as it was. If you swap, that was episode 8. Chikai Bardo, which was the Gemma like episode, which I thought was gorgeous, was episode 7.
Mm-hmm.
I think you swap those.
Mm.
If you swap those, so you have like the main narrative going with every character all through season 6, episode 6. Cobell's been gone for like 3 episodes at this point. You check back in with her.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not going to spoil it. You find out her importance to the Severance procedure. I'll put it that way.
Mm-hmm.
And then it ends with this cliffhanger phone call. Devin calls her up in the car, ends, and you're like, whoa, what the fuck? And then you do the Gem episode that ends with that same phone call. Then you have, I think, a better launch pad into the final 2 episodes. Instead of this kind of like stagnant, dark, weird Cobell, you have this, you know, this like beautiful, transcendent Gem episode. And that brings you into the final 2. I think they just need to swap those 2 episodes.
And I really did enjoy the Gem episode. Like that was, I was like, this is the kind of like, I love this kind of backstory.
Yeah.
Can't wait till we get one about Rickham. But yes, Stranger Things, it's a favorite. I'm looking forward to season 5 coming back. I'm glad that it'll be done after this, right?
Here's the thing, Brandy, it will be done, but it's going to take literally, I think each episode is at least 90 minutes. We're getting 6 films, basically, or 8, however many episodes there are, they're all basically films. So
I don't mind. I don't mind. I'm not going to watch them all one time.
I know, right? You know what? I need to change something before I make my next pick. I'm going to change The Good Place to a favorite.
Okay. It feels like more of a favorite.
Yeah.
But I see the argument for best.
Yeah. It's a favorite, but it's because now that's my turn, I can't let this show not be drafted.
Mm-hmm.
And it has to be Twin Peaks. And that has to be in a best, because it's not my favorite. I skipped some episodes. It's weird as fuck.
It is.
But when it hit for me, it really hit for me. So like it was a cultural phenomenon in 1990, like took the world by storm. Like the ratings were out of control, like 30, 40 million people watching these episodes or something crazy in its early run.
Wow.
But then it started to fall off because David Lynch never wanted to reveal who killed Laura Palmer. And the network ABC was like, sorry, buddy, you kind of have to, because we're all used to case of the week, story of the week. And like, you're doing this crazy serialized thing. And like, we need some fucking answers. So season 2, I just watched this. It's like the weirdest thing. The season 1 is only 8 episodes. It just kind of continues right into season 2.
Which is so crazy to think about in 1990 that you're putting out like a Netflix limited series.
Yeah. But then season 2 was like 22 episodes. Mm-hmm. But they revealed the mystery of not only who killed Laura Palmer, which is, I mean, this is now a freaking 35-year-old spoiler. So like it's this demonic presence named Bob.
Mm-hmm.
So, but then who was Bob acting as? That gets revealed like by episode 9 of season 2. And then kind of Lynch and Mark Frost, who is the co-writer, kind of step away because they're tired of the ABC network bullshit. And some of their other writers pick it up and just goes off the rails. Mm-hmm. I straight up, I don't mind a minute. I skipped a lot of those episodes in the middle because I'm like, what the fuck is this?
I barely remember anything from season two.
And then they canceled the show. And then David Lynch was like, wait, but I need to finish the story. Lobby, like appeals to the fans, write letters. Here's the ABC corporate address. Write letters, yada, yada. Get six more episodes to finish the story. Four of them air. Ratings are still tanking. They pull it off the air again. And then like 2 months later, the two-part finale airs to like kind of finish the story. Mm-hmm. And then David Lynch continues it with Fire Walk With Me, which you mentioned. Fire Walk With Me. Which was basically kind of a prequel. So like Laura Palmer is the dead body in the pilot. Fire Walk With Me is like basically everything that happened up to finding that body. And everything that happened in Laura Palmer and fleshes her out as a character, which I thought after watching Twin Peaks was really good.
Which is why it's wild to come in when like Laura Palmer is like fully alive.
Yeah. And then 25 years later, he returns on Showtime with Twin Peaks The Return, which I have not seen yet.
I haven't seen that.
Closes the story. And from everything I can tell is another David Lynch masterpiece. May he rest in peace. So I'm not saying it's the best because I've seen all of it. This is a little bit of a, you know, cultural assist. You know, the critics and reviewers and TV watchers that I know and trust have assured me that it will be when I finish the story. And I, from what I've seen, I've loved a lot of it. Like, I'm in. I'm zoned. Like, I got to know what's going on. I want to know about the Black Lodge. I want to know about, you know, all that shit. So, and I wouldn't feel, I mean, it's at the eighth pick. It really slid down the draft board here, but we have to have Twin Peaks in our top 10 mystery box TV shows of all time. So I'm going to take it as the best.
Yeah, no, it makes sense. All right. Well, I think that my...
it's your final pick.
My final pick. I mean, obviously, it probably should have been one of my first picks because I love it so much, but Black Mirror. It's the best.
Yeah, there you go.
I do think it's one of the best mystery box shows that has ever been on. And you know what I love about it? It's like, this is how you redo the Twilight Zone.
Literally. Yeah,
like,
literally.
This is like, I just, it feels like I saw the evolution. I've been into the evolution of what then became Black Mirror. Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like those kinds of shows I've always been into. And I don't know. I just think it's just so, it's so creative.
Yeah.
Like two of my favorite songs that are still on my like song list are from the Ashley O episode, the Miley Cyrus episode.
I still can't believe you love that episode so much. Like that's not, it's very good.
Right? I love it.
But that is the magic of Black Mirror. Mm-hmm. There's something for everyone. And like I said at the beginning of this podcast, every episode has that question of like, what's really happening here? Like, what is going on? So like, there are all these kind of micro mysteries. Mm-hmm.
And it's just like, and I love this near future that it's set in because like, it looks so similar to where we are now. And it's all stuff that's only feels like it's just like a couple steps away.
Yes.
Like,
yes.
You know, San Junipero, like definitely happening right now. That's definitely happening right now. I always get the two mixed up. There's the one where people can have the, they basically can take a picture of everything with the cameras like in their eyes.
The video?
The video yeah. that
season one, about me or something. Entire history of you.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Top five episode of Black Mirror. Absolutely.
Well, I always get that one confused with the one that I think it was also from the same season. It was the clone. She got the AI clone of the guy, of her husband who died.
Different season, but that's called Be Right Back. Another top episode.
Yeah. Like I think I somehow watched both of those back to back somehow. Mm-hmm. And like, so they both like they're like the. That's the kind of like tech that I love. But like, oh my God, you put like my dead husband's internet history into a very realistic looking clone.
Yeah. You know why? Because you probably did watch them back to back. Entire History of You is season one, episode three. Mm-hmm. There were only three episodes. Mm-hmm. Be Right Back was season two, episode one.
It was okay.
Yep.
That's why.
Yep. Yeah. White Christmas with John Hamm, another all-time episode of the show.
So good.
Very, very scary and upsetting. the John Hamm episode.
So upsetting.
Nosedive with,
that's
again,
the rating one.
The ratings one, very prescient. And that came out in 2016 before it even got to where we are right now, almost a decade ago, which is crazy.
The, I think it's an Archangel, the one that's where she puts the tracker in her daughter.
Yeah.
Like, happening now, like everyone puts an AirTag in their kid's backpack. Like,
exactly. Yeah. The San Junipero, which we mentioned, is they keep trying to reach those heights. That was a season three episode. Season four had USS Callister, which I mentioned, Archangel, which you just mentioned. Hang the DJ was really good. Another kind of romantic one. That's the one where it's like the dating program that puts an expiration date on relationships, but then come to find out it's like kind of like an AI. We're going to run every single possible outcome to see if you're actually a match situation, which I, again, is very prescient. Then it kind of, Black Mirror takes a bit of a season five, I don't think was very good. Season six, we talked about on the podcast. That's where with Joan is Awful and Locke Henry and Beyond the Sea, some good ones.
Locke Henry's so good.
Yeah. Now we're at season seven. So
yeah,
no matter what, every season has two bangers.
Every season has at least two bangers. Because what else was in season five? Was that when they had the weird black and white episode?
Five only had three episodes. It was Striking Vipers.
Oh, I like Striking Vipers. That was the one with the guys that
they played video games and
playing video games.
Start hooking
up. It's like kind of gay.
Yeah, exactly. Actually, you love season five because that's the one with fucking Rachel, Jack, and Ashley too. So you love season five.
Yeah, I did love season five.
And then Smithereens, which I liked, but that's the one with fucking hot priest in it, Andrew Scott.
Oh, the hot priest. Yes. Yeah. And he was the Uber driver.
Yeah. It's a great show.
Yeah. So Black Mirror is a best. So I feel really good about my draft picks.
Yeah. I'll tell you what, I'm going to bring it all the way back around before I talk about some honorable mentions. My final pick will be basically a Black Mirror episode strung out into two seasons going on a third. It's going to be Severance. I'm going to bring it all the way back around. Okay. My last pick.
All right.
It's not a best. If you asked me after season one, it might have been. But now season two has come out. Like I said, I'm not going to repeat everything I said, but I'm engaged. I'm interested still. I want to know what happens. I like a lot of the characters.
You're excited to watch. I think that's a, you know, that you need that for a favorite.
And you know me, I always like a little bit of current representation on any list that I'm doing. So I want Severance. I feel like it fits as a fave. And we'll see how it goes. But yeah, Severance is my final pick. So our top 10 mystery box shows of all time. We have X-Files, Lost, Russian Doll, The Leftovers, Mr. Robot, The Good Place, Stranger Things, Twin Peaks, Black Mirror, and Severance.
Those are good shows.
That's a pretty good list.
If anybody's looking for some recommendations to get their mystery box on, like, check them out. They're all on some streaming service that you probably have access to.
That's right. I will say there are a few that I know listeners will be like, well, what the fuck about this, that, and the third? I just haven't seen some of these shows, but like, I'm looking at Fringe, I know was big, I never watched it. I'm looking at The OA, I know was highly regarded, I never watched it.
But I liked The OA, but I didn't feel like I could put that down because I don't think I finished it.
Yeah. Dark, the German show, I've heard raves about. Like, I actually really can't wait to watch it. It was a Netflix show, two seasons. Mrs. Davis, I had on here. That was a more recent Damon Lindelof star. Betty Gilpin as a nun. Again, just...
Was that on Peacock? Yeah, that's on Peacock.
It was a Peacock, yeah. Kind of, again, like that religious theme that Lindelof loves. I also wrote down a couple recent shows. Silo, which we mentioned, which I love. I've read the book, so like I kind of know what's in the mystery box. So it's kind of not as high. Season one was really good. Season two, not as good. But that's going on Apple TV right now. Yellow Jackets.
I had Yellow Jackets was could like I had that one down, but then like that's it was it would have been a favorite for me because I thought that the first season was really, really good.
Yeah.
It has not been good since.
Have you stuck with it? Have you watched it all?
Yes.
I liked season three way more than season two.
Season three was better than season 100%. Season three is better than season two.
But where they landed it. Let's talk about Yellow Jackets for a minute here, because my big problem was, what is the deal with Shauna? I could not.
That's like, who is she?
I never wanted to root for her, but I feel like the show keep because like it's like that protagonist thing where it's like the person who seems to be the protagonist, you kind of want to root. It's like the Walter White syndrome. It's like, well, he's on screen the most, so I'm going to root for him until it becomes to the point where it's like, well, fuck this person.
Wait, I'm actually supposed to be rooting for Misty.
We got to the fuck this person point with Shauna, and I think that's making the show way better. I'm like, I could freely despise Shauna now, and I feel way better about it. And I'm interested in what's going to happen next. Like,
yeah,
I almost, if I was going to put that in, I probably would have swapped out The Good Place as a favorite. Maybe Severance mm-hmm. is a, probably Good Place. I also, okay, this is the one I want to talk about with Kristen Milioti in it. The Resort. Mm-hmm. Have you seen The Resort on Peacock?
No, what is it?
What a gem. 8 episodes, Kristen Milioti, William Jackson Harper, Chidi from The Good Place, mm-hmm. the guy from fucking High Maintenance. Remember the guy from High Maintenance?
Yes. What's his name? Ben?
Ben something. Yes. Oh, that's going to bug me. But yeah, I think he's also like a writer and director on it. It's mm-hmm. produced by the same people, writer, producer who did Palm Springs, that movie with Andy Samberg and Kristen Milioti. It's awesome. It's just like this couple has been, it's like, I think their 10-year anniversary. They go on a vacation to a resort. Shenanigans. Kristen Milioti falls down the hill on like an ATV, whatever, and finds a cell phone from like 20 years ago or something. From this missing kid who went missing at the resort. And then it starts like this dual narrative about these two kids who went missing and Kristen and William Jackson Harper trying to solve this mystery. And they get intertangled and intertwined. There's some timey-wimey bootstrap paradox stuff to it. I'm like, this is just a really good, fun, well-executed 8 episode tiny little mystery box show. And I really liked it. I thought it was really good.
Okay.
Check out The Resort on Peacock. What else did you have? Do you have anything else that was close for you?
Homecoming was close for me as the best.
That is your guy, Sam Esmail.
Yeah.
Just a Robot. He did that show. Yeah. Mm-hmm. That was a good one. That was on Prime. Who was the?
Julia Roberts.
Yeah, Julia Roberts was in it.
Mm-hmm. Also, True Detective was on my list, except that like I thought season one was really great. Seasons two and three stunk.
I liked three. I didn't think three stunk.
I didn't like three. Two was the worst.
But three wasn't really Mystery Box. Three was like a guy losing his memory. Yeah. It wasn't quite Mystery Box. I liked it. Four, I still haven't seen. I know you loved
four. I loved. And it is very like, it's got the supernatural, the whole mystery of it all.
From what I hear, it's kind of tied. Like one and four are kind of like mm-hmm. a part of a piece, it seems like, right?
That's what it does seem like. And then it was never going to be on my list, but like something I wish could have been on my list because I wish it had been better is Westworld.
Westworld. I was going to say, let's say it on three. It would have been Westworld for me too. Season one, phenomenal. Season two, not quite as good. Season three, terrible. Season four, got awful.
Wait, I didn't even realize I got to a season four. Is that when Jesse Pinkman came in or did he come in season three?
That was three. And then there was a fourth. And I honestly,
okay, so the fourth I didn't even watch.
I don't even fucking remember what happened. It's like, memory holds. I don't even know. Like for all intents and purposes, that shit ended when what's her face shot what's his name at the end of season one. And that should have been the end of it. Like it was an awesome first, like I would have been talking about it like I did the resort, like this one awesome one season little wonder. Like it would have been really, really good.
Mm-hmm. I mean, the fact that like I still refer to James Marsden as Teddy. Like, I feel like that is like Westworld did have an effect on me.
It did do that. Yeah.
Even after seeing him in Paradise, I'm still like, what is Teddy doing?
Yeah. No, I look at Jimmy Simpson. He was in USS Callister. I'm like, oh, that's Young Man in Black right there. Okay. I have one more before we sign off here. I have one more show we need to talk about because mm-hmm. I specifically asked you to watch this. It's part mm-hmm. of the more recent slate of Mystery Box shows. And the people love it. It's a Dan Fogelman mm-hmm. show. Dan mm-hmm. Fogelman of This Is Us fame. We both loved This Is Us. Mm-hmm. It stars Sterling K. Brown of mm-hmm. This Is Us fame. It's called Paradise. Mm-hmm. It's on Hulu. The premise is, again, an event happens, mm-hmm. which causes some sort of global extinction event. Seems climate related. And the world's richest and most powerful fuck off to this underground built in the mountains town called Paradise. And you realize this at like the end of the first and second episode, it seems just like, oh, whatever. It's this guy, he's a secret service. He's protecting the president. And then the president's murdered. Mm-hmm. Hello, James Marsden, yet again. Mm-hmm. and then things go from there. Like who murdered the president? What is this place? How did this happen? Yada, yada, mystery box stuff. People are loving it. I watched the whole thing. What do you think about Paradise?
I'm enjoying it. I'm up to episode 4.
Oh, okay.
So I haven't finished, but like I am going to finish.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Because you know that like usually I get like I'll give something an episode and then like, you know, then I'll move on. But yeah, with this one, I was like, I'm interested. I thought that the rug pull at the end of the first episode of like, wait, what? Because like I just love that. Like I didn't. You should have seen that coming.
Right. Right.
But like I didn't at all. And it was a really nice little surprise. I like how they are. I like how they're doling out the information, how like, you know, it's very This Is Us in terms of like we're in the present, but now we're in the past like 10 years ago. Oh, wait, now we're in the past 2 years ago.
You know what? We should have put This Is Us as a mystery box show on our list because it kind of is.
Yeah.
It really. How did Jack die?
How did
all these people get to where they are? Honestly, mm-hmm. I'm kind of kicking myself, but that. It's not the typical genre, you know, all those things that I mentioned. Mm-hmm. It doesn't have any of those aspects, but it is very mystery forward. Mm-hmm. Dan Fogelman is a mystery box TV show creator for sure.
Yeah, I'm into it. I like all of the performances. I'm genuinely interested in where the story is going to go because like I feel like there's always I love all of the twists and turns that it's making because it's like I really have no idea where it's going, but like it's so like entertainment forward mm-hmm. that like
it is
I get it
almost to its detriment.
Like it feels like a network show. It's weird that it's on Hulu. Like yeah. It feels like this would have no problem being on ABC on a Thursday night. Like,
but here's where I disagree. I think it would have a problem because I don't think if it's on ABC on a Thursday night, well, one, I guess episode orders have been severely diminished, so you could still I guess do 8 episodes on ABC. Mm-hmm. But like if this season was 16, 20 network episodes, I couldn't do it.
That's honestly the only good thing about like episode orders being diminished is that like you don't have to use the 20 episode. You don't have to mm-hmm. tell a story in 20 episodes
yeah.
when it can be told in 8 and that it's okay to tell it in 8. You know what I mean?
Yeah. So unfortunately, we're going to have to do some mystery box storytelling here and say, yeah, tune in and, you know, further down the line to get our full thoughts and to get mm-hmm. the answers to the mystery of whether Dan really enjoyed Paradise or not and how he thought about the finale and if it landed its plane. Because mm-hmm. I don't want to spoil anything. There's a mm-hmm. lot that is yet to happen. All I will say is that a Nintendo Wii plays a crucial part in the narrative.
Okay.
And I still don't know how I feel about it. So what's going to happen, Brandy, is we're going to reconvene in a, whenever we do, we're going to do one more draft. So we're kind of coming towards the end of this current run of episodes. We're going to do mm-hmm. an episode coming up with our friends Marnie and her mom, Felicia. We're going to talk about miniseries. And then we're going to do a little bit after that, a draft towards the end of May, early June, because that's when the Emmy window closes. Mm-hmm. And by then you will have finished Paradise and we can fully recount whether it deserves to be counted as one of the top shows of the year. Mm-hmm. So stick around for that. And then a little bit after that, Brandy and I, we're going to update our criteria because it's been a while.
It has been.
I just reminded, I'm pretty sure it's been too long. I'm pretty sure Stranger Things is still on my criteria as a favorite. Post season 4, I think I put it there. I swapped something out. And a lot has happened since. So we're not only going to update our criteria, we're also going to expand them. Right now, mm-hmm. the standard operation is 6 shows, 2 best, 2 favorite, 2 forever. We're going to expand it. We're going to do our top 10 of all time. We don't know exactly how it's going to work yet. We're going to figure that out down the line, but stay tuned for that. So a lot more coming up. This has been fun.
This has been really fun.
I love a mystery box show. I think we put together a really good list. But until next time. Goodbye, friends.
Bye, friends.
You've arrived here at a critical moment.